full of cinematic garbage. One man will be your filter. Welcome to Movies Worth Seeing with your host, Michael Piccinieri.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the first big episode with a new name change. It's Movies Worth Seeing. I'm your host, Michael Piccinieri, joined by the lovely and bodacious Lisa Bonici.
Woohoo! Hello, thank you for having me here today.
Did you like that intro?
Yeah, I loved it.
How's it going, honey?
Good. Do you want to tell everyone who I am?
Oh, sorry. I got so excited by your presence, I forgot to introduce you. I'm joined by Lisa Bonici, my partner, my soulmate, my life force.
I'm blushing.
She's my Iceman.
That'll make more sense when we talk about
it. I should say my wingman, which makes sense because we are talking about Top Gun Maverick today. The long-awaited Top Gun sequel that we didn't know we needed, but now that we have it, we're like, holy shit, I did need this.
That's exactly right.
Oh, wow. What a film. I guess this is one of those films, without going into too much detail, because obviously we've got to cover the plot and all that, but this was honestly one of the best sequels to a film like I've ever seen. As far as a sequel that's been made like 30 years after the original, I feel like any other time it's happened, it's been cheap and like a throwaway and meant nothing and the script was shit and all that crap, but we didn't get that here.
It wasn't the one-night stand of sequels, that's for sure.
Did you write that?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't write it. In my bowels, no.
Let's get into our thoughts going into the film. Lisa, me and you actually watched Top Gun 1 right before we went and watched Top Gun Maverick. What were your thoughts going into this film?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had obviously never seen Top Gun and also realized that I hadn't seen a Tom Cruise movie.
And now you're hooked.
And now I'm hooked. So, you know, it was such a good idea for you to say, yes, okay, you haven't seen Top Gun. Let's watch it before we go tonight. Because if I hadn't seen the first one, I think so much would have been lost in the sequel. I wouldn't have known what was going on. There were so many moments that, you know, were so profound and there was so much emotional connection to the characters that if I hadn't seen the first one, I wouldn't have got. So if anyone's listening and you're thinking about seeing this, I highly recommend that you watch the original before you watch the sequel. You'll get a lot more out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was tossing up as well whether, like that day, whether we should have watched the first movie. And a part of me was like, oh, nah, it should be all right. Like, there's not that much that's happened. But I'm so glad I got you to watch the first movie with me because, yeah, like you said, there was so much emotional weight in this film. And Tom Cruise did such a good job of keeping characters, especially his character, Maverick, consistent from the first film. It feels like a reunion with a bunch of, you know, friends, like a high school reunion where you get to see all these friends that you haven't seen for a long time. And like immediately this film was like, here's Maverick, and Maverick is the same Maverick from the original.
That's how I felt as well, even though I'd only literally connected with these characters about 3 hours earlier. By the time I was watching the movie, I was so in. I was so connected to these characters. I so cared about what they were experiencing and feeling and the history. And, you know, it was really cool as well because, you know, this first movie was made before I was born. And now, like, watching Tom Cruise walk onto the set and knowing that actually over 30 years had passed was, like, really cool. It felt so authentic because you saw him kind of really young and then a little bit aged and you're like, wow, like, that's not special effects. He's just older. It's because it's just been over 30 years, you know?
Yeah, like, I feel, and I wasn't really a Tom Cruise guy until recent years, but Tom Cruise is legit probably the last, like, true movie star, like, consistently amazing movie star. just delivering on the Hollywood blockbusters with films like this and the Mission Impossible franchise that's been getting better and better with each sequel. Like, when I looked up on Rotten Tomatoes, the two best films, highest rated films for Tom Cruise was this. Top Gun Maverick was number two. Mm. And number one was Mission Impossible Fallout. I'm like, I don't know any other actor that's like just consistently fired on all cylinders and managed to deliver. And yeah, there's been like very few misfires for him, but
yeah, I mean, the first thing I did when I got home last night, I was like, I need to watch a Tom Cruise movie. So, you know, we put on Minority Report and I was hooked. Like, I had to watch it to the end. And, you know, that was rated pretty highly as well by Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I'm almost scared that you're going to run off and leave me for Tom Cruise.
He's very busy, like, darling.
I hope you don't think of him when,
when I never think of him. He's out of my mind.
The other Who's day, Tom Cruise? I was like, I thought you called me Tom.
No, I was just leaving a message on his answering machine. I wasn't speaking to you.
Oh, well, I feel so much better now. Thanks, babe.
No, it's okay. It's
getting right into the plot of the film. After more than 30 years of service as one of the Navy's top aviators, Pete Maverick Mitchell is where he belongs, pushing the envelope as a courageous test pilot and dodging the advancement in rank that would ground him when he finds himself training a detachment of Top Gun graduates for a specialized mission the likes of which no living pilot has ever seen. Maverick encounters Lieutenant Bradley Bradshaw, played by Miles Teller, call sign Rooster, the son of Maverick's late friend and radar intercept officer, Lieutenant Nick Bradshaw, a.k.a. Goose. Facing an uncertain future and confronting the ghosts of his past, Maverick is drawn into a confrontation with his own deepest fears, culminating in a mission that demands the ultimate sacrifice from those who will be chosen to fly it. Shit, whoever wrote that plot line fucking deserves a Medal of Honor.
That voice was hot, honey.
The trailer voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope I've been working on it.
I've been rehearsing all day for this.
Is that what you were doing? So, yeah, where do you want to go after the plot read?
The first thing, I guess, is Tom Cruise's performance.
Mm.
Like, as we said, huge, bankable movie star. I feel like, you know, there's probably been times when people have been like, oh, I don't know about Tom Cruise. He's not my guy for whatever reason, but I feel like there's no hater on Tom Cruise that can watch this film and still be like, nah, he's not a good actor. He hits every moment. He doesn't miss a beat. He brings his own kind of aging as a theme in this film. Like, they make references to it in the dialogue. Like, oh, you're getting up there, man. You got to step aside for the young kids to take your spot. And Tom Cruise is kind of like, nah, man, maybe someday, but not today.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I feel like Tom Cruise really rocked it. And as somebody who has basically never watched a Tom Cruise movie, except, of course, Eyes Wide Shut, but every other movie I haven't seen. So, I've obviously been one of those people that has really taken the perspective of like, oh, Tom Cruise, like, he's well known for Scientology. He's well known for being married to Nicole Kidman.
And public meltdowns.
Public meltdowns, jumping on Oprah's couch, like kind of being a Looney Tune, you know. And then more recently, I kind of gained more respect for him because I was reading the Will Smith book and I was learning that like even Will Smith used to try and keep up with him in terms of like Tom Cruise marketing his movies. Like apparently, like he just put so much effort into like visiting countries all around the world to promote his work. And so the name Tom Cruise is known, you know, it's a very big name. And yeah, I didn't even realize he was one of the highest paid actors in the world for a very long time. Might still be, haven't looked that up. But yeah, I guess after seeing this movie, I was like, and I, you know, I'm not really into like action kind of fighter films or like,
yeah, you're the true film test.
Yeah.
That men can like bring their partners, like this. Yeah. This isn't just a bloke's like big old machine guns and fucking penis extension jet fighter planes shit. Like the ladies will like this.
Well, I am a lady that liked it 100%. Like, I just felt it had so many themes of, you know, loyalty and, you know, instinct. And like you just said, this idea of humans versus technology, and like the theme that kept coming through and the quote they kept saying was, you know, it's not the plane, it's the pilot. And it's like this idea that technology can't really replace the human, you know, like even if you've got these amazing planes that can outrun, you know, another plane, like it's the pilot, it's the pilot's instinct and skill and heart and their relationships and like the teamwork and all these other things that really matter.
Mm. The human emotion, like the human skill, can never kind of be outdone by machines. It's very similar to films like Terminator, which is interesting because Terminator 2 is one of my favorite sequels, and there's not that many good sequels, and now Top Gun is up there. I felt, yeah, like especially nowadays when we think of or we hear about in the news that a lot of in war they use more tactical strategies like using automated kind of drop ships or weapons that are automated, controlled by computers and artificial intelligence. Yeah, this film has that theme of like nothing will ever replace like a human. And there were situations in this where, yeah, the human pilot was kind of like the underdog, which I liked.
And Tom Cruise did an amazing job of, yeah, just depicting like the full range of emotions of people that are, I guess, living out their purpose as well. You know, like he kept saying throughout the film that like this is, he is a pilot. Like it's not what he does, it's who he is. And yeah, the passion that he had and the, yeah, just the emotion. It was an incredibly emotional film actually.
You could tell that Tom Cruise is invested. He's fully in this. This is a passionate project for him. I feel in a lot of sequels, you can tell when the actor is phoning it in because they don't believe in what they're doing. But here, I totally believe Tom Cruise is 100% behind this. I even heard that some cinemas there was Tom Cruise, like a little video message of him saying thank you for supporting the film and coming to see it in a theater. And I'm like, those little things are what show his passion and drive, what separates him from the average actor. And this film was filmed around the time when COVID was around, and they felt it was better to delay the release of this so that it could be in theaters. And for us, I feel there's no way I could have enjoyed this as much watching it at home as I did watching it in a big theater with you, with two large bloody popcorns and all these snacks.
I know.
Recliner seats. Yeah, go incredible. All the way if you watch this.
I mean, there were the people next to us.
Oh, my God.
Their phones kept going off a little bit during like this really intense scene, and I was like, I really want to tell them that they need to turn their phones off and to go away or stop. But I was like, I can't ruin this scene. This scene is so incredible. I just have to take it in. Nobody move. It was such a good scene.
It was.
And the surround sound, you're right, like being at the cinema made it just even more immersive. Like it was incredible.
Yeah. The big thing for me, Tom Cruise, this is still the same character from the first film. Reckless and brash, however more skilled, still wrestling with the guilt from, you know, from Goose's death in the first film, which is something really cool to see that things carried over. I felt Tom's performance, yeah, I guess we can move on from there. But honestly, like I can't really fault Tom with anything. He makes even the simplest scenes in this film so emotionally invested. And yeah, you brought up that one scene. We'll get to that when we get to spoilers, but
he had this ability of,
he has this weight that you can tell is carried over from the original film.
Yeah, that's honestly what I feel like Tom Cruise and just everyone on the set did. Like they carried over the themes and the issues from the original and brought them over into this one. And so like there was just this continuity in his character, like the stuff, the issues and the things that upset him in the first one, like you could still see them, you know, it's not that he'd left them all behind, like the grief that he carried from Goose's death and everything, like it still showed up in a really authentic way in this movie and, you know, obviously carried on to the next generation with his son, with Goose's son. And, yeah, like we talked about the raw display of his emotion, like even just, you know, references to Goose, just his eyes. Like you just looked at his eyes and they just welled up and, like, it was just incredible that you could just be so invited into this world of something that is just a movie and just felt like reality. It just felt like you said before, these are your friends and you know everything about them. It's like how quickly they got us to connect with that story.
I feel like you're going to cry as you say that.
I just loved it. Wow. I just really, I was moved.
I mean, this film for me seems to be like, if Tom Cruise was heroin, I introduced you to heroin now because now you're like, oh my God, I have to watch every Tom Cruise movie. Like the fact that you, like we watched Top Gun 1, watched Top Gun 2, and then you, when we came back home last night, you were like, I got to watch another one. I got to watch something else. What else is he in? Fucking let's boot it up. What's he in?
I might not be available for a few weeks. I hope that's okay. I'm just going to be on a Tom Cruise binge.
Yeah.
Sorry to all my listeners.
That says a lot. Okay, so getting into why this movie is worth seeing, one of the big things about this film and one of the videos, I watched a video, a featurette, and it showed all the actors doing this intense kind of jet fighter pilot training behind the scenes to get into their characters. But even more than that, they are actually in fucking jets that are flying through a real environment. And in a world where every film these days is just a green screen, a soundstage, and you feel it, you can tell the actors aren't there interacting with these environments. You can feel it. There's something off. And this film feels so authentic and stands out so well because it's all real. It looks so real. Other than like very, very, very small details, you can tell that they're actually in it. You can feel the vibrations and you feel like you're in the cockpit with them.
Yeah, like when you compare, because it was really funny, we watched the last half an hour of the first film after the second movie, and just comparing the special effects and the flight scenes in the second movie with the first movie, like you realize how easy on the eye this sequel is because it just made it so easy to follow what was happening. Mm. You know, if someone shot a missile or someone, you know, did something, like you could follow who it was and what angle, you know, it was happening from and like you could see where everyone was placed and where they were going. Like the plot just made so much sense because all of the shots just made it really clear what was happening. Whereas in the first one, like it was, you know, those flight scenes were just like basically a montage of all these different images and it was really hard to follow.
Yeah, like you said, I felt so disoriented in those battles in the first movie that I did not want to see that much of the aerial combat. Whereas in this, like I feel 60-70% of this movie is aerial combat and it's totally cool because you know exactly what's happening. It's not like giving you a headache. It's not like you can't keep up with the speed. The way they film everything is so fun and fast, but yet you can still comprehend what's happening.
Mm, you can see which character it is. You can see whose plane is whose, but you know what each person's doing.
Mm.
It just made it a lot easier to follow. They also did a really good job, I found, of explaining the plot. We were talking about this last night, how they really set up the story at the beginning really clearly and easily. You know, they basically just you know, they had this short brief that they gave Maverick at the beginning of like what the mission is, and that, you know, that was obviously explaining it to us as well. And then it didn't, like, nothing was introduced that changed from the brief. Like it was the same brief the whole movie. There wasn't like these weird twists and turns where you're just like, where did that come from? It was like, this is the mission, this is what you need to do, this is how
to finish,
you know, you're going to be. It. Yeah, this is how we're going to accomplish it. And that was it. There was no like strange twists and turns. Yeah. It was so easy to follow.
No like plot twist where the general's like, all right, I'm actually the bad guy this whole time or some shit. Like, especially the last film I reviewed on here was Doctor Strange. That film was just constantly being like, oh, okay, this is the story. Here's a new bit of information that completely changes everything. Here's a new plot device. And you couldn't keep up. It was a complete mess. This was so simple and did not have to be or try to be something complex and over the top. It was just like, Maverick has this simple character arc that he needs to confront the past and deal with the death of Goose, which comes back to haunt him through Goose's son, Rooster. And yeah, the other thing I really like is Miles Teller and Tom Cruise, like, they develop the relationship organically. I feel Miles looks so much like the original actor that played Goose that it gives you a bit of chills. It gives that added emotional weight to Maverick's trauma and emotional turmoil because you feel like that is Goose's son. You believe it.
Mm, absolutely. And, you know, I think, again, they focus on character development here instead of throwing in all these different plot twists. It's like, here's a simple storyline and, you know, the characters have enough complexity in themselves that they don't have to amplify it, you know? Like, it's already a character grieving. That's a difficult thing in itself. Like, that has enough emotional richness to keep us involved, you know? There's – and I don't think this is a spoiler because I'm pretty sure everyone would know this from trailers, but basically, like, the son, you know, obviously has a bit of resentment towards Maverick because of what happened to his father, and he – you know, like, they have an unresolved relationship between them. There's conflict. And, you know, it's really interesting just to watch also how, like, Maverick, he's this amazing, like, fighter pilot, and they say he's, like, the best in the world. And they keep referring to him as dangerous because, like, they have all these rules, but he's always the one that's, like, pushing outside of the rules.
He plays by his own rules.
He does, yeah. And he's always, like, just trying to be outside the box and do what's not possible, you know, which I think is a little bit like Tom Cruise in a way. Like, which
that
is probably
Tom Cruise,
he's
man.
So perfect for
I
it.
I mean, he does his own fucking stunts in every, like, movie he's in.
Yeah.
He climbs the Burj Khalifa and hangs onto a jet in those Mission Impossible movies. And so, yeah, he really does play by his own rules.
Like I said to you yesterday, he's like the Tony Robbins of movies. He, like, just wants to see what the humans are capable of.
What so
he
is
just
the limit?
What's the
on
limit?
The human,
you know,
body.
Yeah. What
and
can
mind.
I do? Yeah. And, you know, how successful can I be? And all of that. So I think, yeah.
What else? The film has great fan service. Fans of the original will not feel betrayed by any of the new stuff. And the film does a good job in that it doesn't. It never loses sight that Maverick is the central focus of the film. Because it knows that's what the original fans want. They want Maverick. It never loses sight of that. And there's plenty of cameos and emotional scenes that fans of the original will be like, this is delivered. And the good thing is that, for me personally, I felt Top Gun, the original, wasn't that special. So, this sequel had lots of things that it improved upon, like the flights and the aerial combat being really shot the way they were, but also the story, the clarity, the simplicity, almost everything except for one thing was improved upon in this movie. And it had great respect to those characters. It stuck within their traits. Yeah, the action is fast, hard-hitting, practical special effects, real-life flight sequences. I honestly feel this film, those real-life flight sequences alone is proof that this film will be remembered, whereas most Marvel superhero films are forgettable as fuck, in my opinion. Sounds harsh, but I mean, it's true. There's stuff about this that's going to make this film stand out and last, have longevity. Now we get into what could have been done better. After we just told you all this amazing stuff, you're probably thinking, what could this film have fucked up? And it's not even that big of a fuck up. This is real nitpicky shit. But I felt the romantic relationship between Maverick and Jennifer Connelly's character was so rushed and had barely any time to really develop. It totally could have been scrapped and I wouldn't have cared. Like, I wouldn't have felt like I was missing something. Having said that, Connelly and Cruise do have some nice moments together. And they do have good chemistry. I just didn't feel it was a romantic connection. I felt it was more like friends.
Yeah, I think like we both agreed that the original movie, yeah, it had a bit of a more interesting love interest and it was a bit more like exciting because it was kind of forbidden because she was, you know, his superior at work and I think she was a bit older than him as well. And yeah, it was just like quite sexy. Whereas, yeah, it was funny that this one, you know, they kind of like, as we said before, like all the characters, there was a lot of respect for what had happened in the original movie and there was a lot of continuance, you know, any character that was kind of, you know, important in the first movie, they kind of referenced them or talked about them in some way. Like, for example, Rooster's mum, they mentioned, mentioned her, you know, so you kind of got this sense of like there's this real continuity, whereas this love interest, Jennifer Connelly, was kind of just brought in and we were like, are we supposed to know her? Like, there was this almost kind of forced familiarity of like, we're supposed to feel something about this woman because he knows her. But like, I just didn't feel it. And I couldn't, like, they kind of kept shooting to these still moments of like her having all this emotion in her eyes. And I was like, I don't really know whether I should be cheering for this relationship or not. Like, I'm not that excited about it.
Yeah. It felt like when you go to a wedding, there's someone like crashing the wedding that you don't know and they're trying to be like, oh, don't you remember me? I'm such and such's cousin or whatever. And just like, you don't belong here, dude. What the fuck are you doing at this wedding? You don't belong here. Like, Jennifer Connelly is like, there's a familiarity in that you're like,
you know, you're supposed to care.
Yeah, you know you're supposed to care and you're like, Jennifer Connelly is one of the greats. Like, I love Jennifer Connelly and she is an 80s like icon in that she had big films, big roles in the 80s, 90s. So, and as well, I think she's similar age to Tom Cruise. I could be wrong, but at least it doesn't feel far-fetched, her being a love interest. But for me, it was like, you either have Kelly McGillis in this role or you don't. Don't put someone else in and then pretend like they have this thing that we're all meant to know about.
Care about.
If the movie had its way, they would have legit just been like, oh, this is Charlie from the first film. And we would just have to be like, oh, okay. It's a completely different actress. Looks nothing like her. All right.
Yeah. It's really funny because both of us came out of the movie and, you know, we were both like, whoa, that was so good. And then I said, but what was the one thing that, you know, I'm interested to see if the one thing that I thought was what you thought. And you were like, yeah, the love interest. I was like, yeah. And you said, oh, like, was she supposed to be a continuation? Was she supposed to be from the first movie? Like, and I'd had the same thought because, like, they kept shooting to her daughter who kind of looked a little bit like Charlie in the first, like, the love interest in the first movie. And I was like, is that supposed to be her daughter? Like, is that trying to show that that's her? Like, what?
Yeah.
It was such a contrast because the rest of the movie, every character you just had this like real deep respect for and the nostalgia of like the connection back to the original. Mm. But with her, it was just like, and you know, who knows, maybe our connection to the other characters was deepened because they had this other character and we can contrast it or something.
Yeah, just the film didn't do a good job of kind of explaining their backstory. And there wasn't really enough time for us to get invested in them.
If you hadn't have seen the original, you may not get as much out of it.
Yeah. And the first film, for me, the sexual tension between the characters brews and builds up for so long of the will they, won't they. And like you said, the stakes are higher because it's forbidden. Whereas in this film, it's just like, oh, she's a chick I used to get with and I kind of broke her heart or something like 20 years ago. Oh, care about this. And the daughter just kind of
keeps popping up everywhere.
Pops up everywhere.
And you're just like, what? Why are we looking at her again? What is she telling us?
It was interesting as well because I told you how I looked up that Kelly McGillis actually said in some kind of interview in 2019, she said that she was not asked to star in the sequel. And she said at the time, I'm old and I'm fat and I look age appropriate for what my age is. And that is not what that whole scene is about. That is like really harsh.
I mean, I think it would have been pretty awesome to have her back in, even if she hadn't stayed in acting and
Yeah, like, I looked at what Kelly McGillis looks like now, and it's like, who gives a fuck what she looks like now? Her character is Charlie, like, in the film. Her weight, the emotional weight of her presence alone. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, she doesn't look right for the film or
for
whatever,
Hollywood.
For Hollywood standards. Like, no one would have given a fuck. Everyone wanted to see Kelly. All the fans of the original Top Gun wouldn't have given a fuck.
And in a way, it would have been very kind of progressive. Like, you know, we've talked a little bit about how the film does have some, like, very nice feminist themes. You know, like, there was a female pilot and they didn't make a massive deal. They were just like, yeah, that's just normal. Cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, which was really good because I feel like in other films they'd be like, she's a female pilot and she can beat the shit out of all the guys and she's twice as strong as all the dudes and she's the best one. Like, the film would try and hammer down, she's better, women are better. Whereas this was done, like, tastefully of just being like, yes, there's a female fighter pilot now. She's just one of them. Like, they've all got their unique personalities.
And it was kind of the same in the original when, you know, Charlie, the love interest from the original, was, you know, she turned out to be the teacher and she could speak all the pilot lingo and she was, like, incredibly smart, incredibly high up, was about to be promoted into this really important position. And, you know, it was the 80s, what, 1986 when that was made. And, you know, she was this beautiful blonde woman that was, like, very sexy and also very intelligent. And it wasn't, yeah, you know, it was a feminist statement without being like, hey, we're being feminist here. It was just, like, really organic and nice.
Yeah. Didn't have to announce it. It just did it.
Mm.
And so it's a shame that Kelly's not in the film.
Because that would have been, like, a nice progressive move of, like, hey, we're choosing someone who's, like, going to be meaningful for the film rather than, like, you know, Hollywood.
Yeah. It just felt weird. It felt weird. It stuck out. But in the grand scheme of things, like, these things that we've brought up are very nitpicky because the film was so good.
It was so good.
That this stuff stood out. But that isn't taking nothing away. Like, Top Gun Maverick right now has a 97% tomato meter rating on Rotten Tomatoes, an audience score of 99%. So, yeah, that's saying something. And let's go over what the critics said. So, I'm just going to bring up, like, five little critic reviews. Dwight Brown from DwightBrownInc.com says, all the visuals glisten, are well composed, perfectly lit, and many are bigger than life due to cinematographer Claudio Miranda's Life of Pi penchant for close-ups. He gave it 3.5 out of 4. Yeah, yeah, 100%. I did really like the close-ups. I think maybe Dwight's brought up something. Those close-ups is why we felt, like, emotionally connected to the characters, the way they shot certain scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for a film about flying jets and, you know, aerial combat, this film still had moments where it grounded itself and was like, no, we're going to come to a bit of a halt, bit of a pause to kind of take a break for some levity, for some humor.
Yeah, there was a lot of good humor, especially in those really tense moments where it was, you know, just about to take itself really seriously and then the actors would make a great joke that was just, you know, it would just relieve all the tension, but it really fit. It didn't feel cheesy. It didn't feel forced. It was really those little moments of humor were good.
Yeah. James, sorry to butcher your name, mate. James Berardinelli from Real Views simply wrote, Top Gun Maverick is one of those rare breeds, a sequel that's better than the original. 3 out of 4. 100% agree, mate.
Yeah.
There's this, as I said, Terminator 2 is my favorite sequel of all time. I can honestly put Top Gun Maverick in that league.
Like, look at that one. That's cute. It says mission accomplished. That's what that's what his rating is.
4 out of 5. Michael Ward, mission accomplished. Let's see if we can find... No, there's no negative reviews. Wow. And last but not least, Top Gun Maverick is the kind of film that will make you cheer in theaters, but it should also withstand the test of time, just as Top Gun has. Yeah, Sarah, thanks to the amazing practical effects and the under-reliance of CGI, this film will, which is awesome. And now is time for our final ratings. You want to go first?
Well, I have to say, you know, I just want to mention the Lady Gaga song as well, because I feel like that's really going to be what I think.
Look, this is what pushed it over the cliff for you.
I think this is what pushed it over the edge. Really, yeah. Because, you know, as I was saying earlier today, you know, Lady Gaga she's up there right now. You know, she's doing very well. She killed it with A Star Is Born. You know, she's kind of reinvented herself as an artist with a real focus on her voice and her, you know, her emotion, which for many years, you know, she was quite gimmicky. And, you know, for her to release this single and have that as the theme of the movie, it is such a powerful song, and they play it throughout the movie in different ways as an instrumental. They have it in the background on the jukebox, you know, when Tom Cruise is talking to somebody in the bar. And then so by the time it gets to the end of the movie, like, you've been primed so many times with this song, so then it's really emotional when it gets to the end.
It
does build it, you know. And I think if this movie ends up being the highest selling movie of the year, which honestly I think it's on track to probably be, you know, people that didn't already love Tom Cruise and weren't already Top Gun fans, you know, it's because of Lady Gaga being involved, like, you know, people that love her, which is a lot of the world right now, are going to be drawn to this movie, I think. So it's made itself really relevant to today, is what I guess I want to say.
Yeah. Me personally, nothing will beat the Playing With The Boys Kenny Loggins song from the original during the volleyball scene. Can't beat that song.
You do like that song.
I love that song.
Yeah. It's cute how, like, they had the volleyball scene in the first one and then they were like, had the football scene, you know, like, it was just those little things. It's like, we're different, but we're the same.
Yeah. But that's something like sequels always do, is they always copy exactly the same shit from the original. Whereas this just was like, no, we're just going to copy that one part, you know, we're not going to copy the whole movie.
It's going to feel familiar, but it's not going to feel the same.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in this kind of cheesy way that some sequels can do, where they really, again, they try to really ram home that it's like, hey, like, we're alluding to something that you should feel emotional about.
Oh, if there's if there's one thing I've hated with sequels, it's that, especially comedy sequels. Like, I remember Zoolander 2 and Anchorman would take the exact same premise of the same joke they did in the original film, but just do the same premise, but then they would change or exaggerate it even more than in the original. And that shit would piss me off because it's so obvious. You've seen Zoolander, right?
I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the sequel.
Like, for example, with the first Zoolander, you know how he's a merman?
Mm-hmm.
They do the same joke in Zoolander 2, but instead he's a cowman. It's like, that's so lazy. I'm just glad that this film didn't do any of the bullshit that I've seen in so many sequels of lazy story, a lack of continuity. You mentioned the Lady Gaga song. A lot of sequels, I feel, would be too over-reliant on, like, what worked in the original.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Lady Gaga song, in a way, represents how this film is like, no, we're willing to do new stuff and try different things.
Yeah, we're willing to connect to the audience of now, you know? Like, even the way they brought in mobile phones and they had, you know, a couple of those texting scenes. Like, it just felt relevant to today.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's stuck in a time capsule of the 80s.
Yeah.
Even though the first film, like you were bringing up, like, the female characters were actually written well and weren't, like, stereotypes, especially for 1986. Like, I actually, as we were watching that film, I was, like, thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know that many films back then that had female characters written that well without those stereotypes. Anyway, final rating.
Is the world ready for our rating, dear?
Yeah. I'm giving Top Gun 4.5 out of 5. I think Top Gun Maverick is everything you would want from a sequel, improving on the original, not just doing the same shit, not just changing little things here and there, not over-relying. It takes the story forward based on what was set up in the original, but improves on everything from the aerial combat to the cinematography to the emotional weight of everything involved and staying true to the characters.
Yeah, I agree. And, yeah, it's a big rating, 4.5. But I agree. And the reason I say that is because as soon as I finished it, I was like, I want to watch this movie again, like almost right now. Like that's, yeah, very rare to have that feeling. You know, the only reason I probably wouldn't give it a five is just some of the reasons we talked about earlier. You know,
yeah,
the love interest was a little bit like, oh, you know.
Yeah. But the good thing is, you know, most people aren't going to go to Top Gun Maverick to see the love interest. That whole dynamic. They're going for the flying shit and the explosions.
And they'll get it.
And they'll get
more. Yeah. There was some scenes where I was just like, whoa, like I actually need to take a breath.
Yeah. I was actually breathing. Like I was taking deep breaths and then I was noticing, I was like, shit, I'm breathing really loud.
I was like, I need to breathe for the characters. Like, are you okay? Yeah.
I thought someone was going to be like, can you keep your breathing down? And I want to be like, can you shut your fucking phone?
Guys, he's not really that violent, don't worry.
Oh, if you leave your phone on.
I had it coming. I know.
Yeah, that's our final rating. So, you're giving it 4.5 out of 5 as well, Lisa?
United
Front. Beautiful.
Fun. Yeah. Can I add a little caveat to that? I think it's only going to be 4 out of 5 for people who have seen the original. I don't actually think it would be a 4 out of 5 for people that are just going in with no context.
Yeah, there's two things I really, really highly recommend with this film. Number one, if you watch it, you watch it in a theater, while it's in the theaters, don't stream it or whatever. Just see it in a theater, in a big theater with a big screen.
We're not getting paid to say that either. That's just reality.
100%. So, there's that. And number two, make sure you watch the first Top Gun.
Mm.
Even if you don't like it, make sure you watch it and finish it.
Mm. It's funny because I kind of laugh at you a little bit when you're always like, you can't see the sequel if you haven't seen the first one. I'm like, I can figure it out. It's okay. But like this one, I was really glad that we did that. I was really glad.
What movie have you watched the sequel without watching the original?
Rush Hour 2.
And that's
funny. It was still funny.
I thought you were going to say something like The Godfather Part 2 without watching the first one. I'd be like, that's blasphemous.
I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there are other things I've watched the second one without having watched the first one.
Harry Potter, X-Men, stuff like that.
Yeah, like I get. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't not see something because I haven't seen the first one. Like, you know, if it's there and everyone's like wanting to see it, I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. I'll just work it out. You know,
I wouldn't
look at you. Yeah,
no way.
I know, because that's
remember I told
the
you
the way you look at me when I say I want to go and see a sequel without watching the original is like it's a deal breaker for you. I can feel it, dear.
Remember when I told you I went and watched like the last Harry Potter movie and I hadn't watched it from
watching there are
after
7 of those.
Prisoner of Azkaban, and I remember Hermione and Ron Weasley like hook up and I was just like so confused and all my mates were like, whoa, yeah. And I was like, wait a sec, didn't Hermione and Harry have something? And they were like, man, that was movies ago. This shit started ages ago. Where you been?
Sorry, guys, we're in the spoiler section of the evening now.
Of Harry Potter?
Yeah.
I don't care about spoiling Harry Potter. They had their time.
That's true.
Yeah, but we're going to get into spoilers for Top Gun and see. Yeah, I guess the one thing. So, spoiler alert for anyone listening, don't listen anymore. We've given the review. Go off and
book your ticket
and go watch the film. But now, spoilers. I guess the only thing really spoilers-wise I would say is just scene with Val Kilmer was fucking amazing.
It was amazing.
That was beautiful.
It was incredible for how little. There was such a small amount of dialogue and there was so little happening in the scene and yet it was so profound because, you know, so from what I understand, Val Kilmer has got
throat cancer.
He's got throat cancer.
So Val Kilmer can't actually speak. He can speak, but it's like burps. Like it wouldn't sound. He doesn't sound that way. The way he spoke in the film near the end, how they had him speak, that was not how he really speaks. He speaks a lot worse because he made a documentary called Vow and we got to see exactly what he's like now dealing with his throat cancer.
So basically when, you know, we saw his name pop up at the beginning, we were like, okay, wow, he's in this. How is he going to be in it? Because we know that he's got throat cancer and can barely speak or can only speak in a very particular type of way. But he ended up being a really central character. So the reason that Maverick was called back to be an instructor at Top Gun was because, like, Iceman called him back, you know? Iceman was – he was a commander or something, right?
Yeah, he was, like, a high rank. So, it all came back. It all connected.
Mm.
So, Maverick, we find out quite quickly that Maverick is still Maverick in that he's quite reckless and doesn't play by his own rules. And you're kind of thinking to yourself, how the fuck is he still in this world of aviation despite all of this? And it's – Iceman has – true to his word, been his wingman, like protecting him and sticking up for him and keeping him safe from being fired or terminated in some way.
Mm. Yeah. And so, we know from the original that they've built this relationship because they flew together and they kind of saved each other and were each other's kind of wingman. And so, they have this bromance now. And then, you know, Iceman, like, starts communicating with Maverick via text, and that's where we're like reading the text messages and we're like, oh, that's cool, that's how they're bringing him in, but how, you know, are we actually going to see him? And there's that amazing scene where, like, we, you know, we see Maverick going to visit him in his house and he turns around and, you know, he's obviously looking so much older, and instead of speaking, he's got a computer there and he types his answers onto the computer. And he's speaking with this man who is writing like 3 or 4 words up on a computer screen and pointing to the screen. And Tom Cruise is just responding and really just like having this conversation with a man who isn't even talking. Mm. And you're just so in it. And every, you know, those 4 words are so powerful. Like, he just chooses these phrases and these words that just say volumes. And it was just a mesmerizing, deeply emotional scene.
Yeah.
Like, I reckon if you dropped a pin, you could hear a pin drop apart from those people.
I couldn't hear a pin drop because the 2 dickheads next to us had their phones going off during the most pivotal moment of the entire movie. But, yeah, I know what you're saying, dear.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was just, like, this great, you know, you could just feel all the emotion and tension, and then they just make this amazing joke.
To relieve all that tension about who the better pilot is. Oh, it's so good.
It was so sweet.
That moment and the moment when Rooster said to Maverick something about essentially like saying something crucial where he blamed Maverick for his dad's death. That moment, like Tom Cruise, his reaction looked like he had been stabbed in the heart.
Mm.
Like, you know Ralph Wiggum in The Simpsons when when Lisa tells him she doesn't like him anymore?
Yeah.
And he's like, ah. It was like that. I was like, no, Tom.
Yeah. It was very amazing. Good acting. Like, his emotions, he just spoke volumes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really it, honestly, like, as far as spoiler talk.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could just talk about a couple more of our favorite moments, but I guess it's really up for people to see it, you know?
Yeah, and
it's not even just, you know, I could say, oh, this moment or that moment, but then, like, yeah, I don't want to detract from anything. And although I do want to say, because if anyone is listening to it after they've seen the movie, like that moment when, you know, Rooster obviously comes back and saves, I even feel bad saying it in case I ruin it for someone, but when Rooster saves Maverick, like, and just watching their relationship repair, like, it's incredibly moving and just it speaks to that legacy and that love that can even affect people from beyond the grave, you know, like the way that he loved his father impacted on his actions and had him put aside all his resentment to save his dad's friend. Like,
yeah,
it's really beautiful.
And Maverick had to let go of holding back Rooster, of holding back Rooster to protect him.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Well, this was fun.
For our listeners, I just let out a massive fart, so that's why there was a bit of an awkward pause.
My hero.
All right. Now, me and Lisa are going to binge some more Tom Cruise. Mm. I'm going to get her into Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't a euphemism for anything, was it?
get her into Mission Impossible.
I'm ready. I'm ready for Mission Impossible.
All right, cool. So, if you enjoyed the show, give us some love and leave a review. And that's it, guys. I will have a YouTube video review of Top Gun up on my YouTube channel at Michael Piccinieri. For now, that is all, guys. Love ya and leave yous. Have a good time.
Thank you for having me on, dear. It was a pleasure.
You can be my wingman.
Oh,
yeah. Anytime.
You can be my wingman anytime.
Thank you for listening to Movies Worth Seeing. Make sure to like and share the show and leave a review. You can follow us on Instagram at Michael Pish Podcasting and watch movie reviews, audience reaction videos, and other fun content on our YouTube channel at Michael Piccinieri.